You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to a special off-day episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's episode is brought to you courtesy of our friends and sponsors over at SeatGeek. Download that SeatGeek mobile app and enter the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate in the mail off of your first ticket purchase from SeatGeek. So as we chat on this Thursday evening, the Rockets, well, it's 24 hours removed from their last basketball game, the 82nd of the regular season, and they are still 72 hours away from opening the playoffs against the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's because, well, the Rockets are the eighth of the eight playoff series to open this weekend. We got the full schedule, not just for game ones, but the entire series. The Rockets don't open until Sunday night at 8 on TNT. That's the last of all the series. Game two, Wednesday night. And then after Wednesday, starting with Friday's game three, it's going to be every other night, Friday, Sunday, and then as far as the series goes, then Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So starting with game three, we'll be in a more normal routine. But for now, it's going to be very spread out every 3 days, basically. They're off for a couple, and then you play Sunday. You're off for a couple, and then you play Wednesday. And the Rockets are at home, of course, for that entire stint. So who does that benefit? I know we're a Rockets podcast. I know it seems obvious, but I don't see how it doesn't benefit the Rockets. They're the team with the shorter rotation. It seems clear now, after seeing how they played in the regular season finale, Mike D'Antoni wants to go into the playoffs with a true eight-man rotation. Maybe if there's foul trouble, spot minutes, Troy Williams gets a look. But really, I think it's going to be your starters, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, and Nene. That's it. And you move pieces around. You have Trevor Ariza, essentially, as your backup four. And maybe Montrezl Harrell in spot minutes, because in this matchup with the Thunder, I'll say an 8.5-man rotation, because there are certainly stretches. It's going to depend on how well Clint Capella plays. I think they'd love for Clint Capella to play really well and seize those minutes at the 5. But if he doesn't, Montrezl Harrell's ability to switch, we'll get to that in a little bit, that could earn him some minutes. But I'll say 8.5-man rotation. So for a team like the Rockets with a decent bit of veterans and trying to play a really short rotation, I think those days off really benefit them, especially being able to rest at home in Houston. What this schedule means to me is that there are no excuses. You can't say that they were tired. You shouldn't be able to say it to begin with, because the Rockets haven't really had meaningful games for at least 3 weeks. They've had plenty of time to get right. Even some of the regulars, James Harden, Ryan Anderson, have had time off. So I never really bought into using fatigue as an excuse anyway, but you definitely can't now. The last playoff series to tip, 3 days off, really 4 days off before the playoffs start, and then 3 days in between one and two, the Rockets should have every opportunity to go out and play really well in these first two games and hopefully grab a 2-0 lead. As far as the Rockets' specific itinerary, they did not practice today, Thursday. That was an entire rest day for them. They will practice on Friday. We have to wait and see what they do on Saturday. Do they have two consecutive practices going into the game? I would bet they do, because it's the playoffs. But that's kind of a gut feel for Mike D'Antoni, how much they need practice versus how much do they need rest. My guess is that with them being relatively healthy and going into the playoffs, they'll take every opportunity they can get for practice. If this is later in the playoffs and they're a little winded or there are a specific injury situation, maybe they try and get an extra off day. My guess is that they practice every day for the time being, but they certainly will Friday. We'll hear a little bit more about what their expectations are for the Oklahoma City series then. And for now, well, we wait. It's kind of, 96 hours between the season finale on Wednesday and then when things finally tip off Sunday night. So there's a lot of idle time here to kind of break down the X's and O's of the matchup. I did that last Friday with Brian Geltzeller. That's in our archives here at Locked On Rockets. Going to do it tomorrow with a couple of good buddies, Salman Ali and Forrest Walker of Red Nation Hoops. Might have a couple more guests as well, but that's what we're looking at doing tomorrow. Had the podcast with Brian last week. Going to have lots of talk in the days ahead. Nothing too earth-shattering to break today, be it from the Rockets or the NBA as a whole. One thing that did stand out to me, and I put this out on my Twitter timeline, at Ben Dubose earlier, the article from Kevin Pelton at ESPN. He does a lot of analytical things, forecasting all the series using the ESPN data, and he actually had the Rockets as the second biggest favorites in the entire first round. Only Golden State against Portland was a bigger favorite than the Rockets, and that's quite a number to throw out there, because really, when you look around the league, I've seen from the guys that picked the Rockets as a trendy upset pick for the Thunder to at least take them 6 or 7 games, if not have a chance to actually beat them outright. Kevin of ESPN has just an 11% shot for Oklahoma City to actually win this series. And I think there's some truth there. ESPN's BPI, their basketball power index, I saw had the Rockets as an 80-20 favorite. So that's two stat-based models that have the Rockets as not just favorites, but big, commanding favorites in this series. And I think it's important to go back and look at the actual numbers. I know Oklahoma City, 47-35 is a respectable record. They're probably going to have the MVP of the NBA, even though we don't think they deserve it, in Russell Westbrook. They're 8 games back of the Rockets, which is a healthy margin. It's not enormous. But when you actually look at the metrics a little bit more, the Thunder's point differential of just plus 0.8, it's actually closer to a 42 or 43 win team, in which you have 10 or 12 games of separation between these teams. It's because the Thunder were so phenomenal, so clutch in these late game situations. And a lot of folks will say, well, does that translate to the playoffs? Well, one thing I'd point out, the Rockets won 3 or 4 in this series. 2 of those 3 wins went right down to the wire, so I wouldn't necessarily say that Oklahoma City's clutch dominance translated against Houston. But when you look at the totality of the evidence across NBA history, really, a lot of these quote-unquote clutch teams in the regular season, it doesn't tend to translate to the playoffs. Point differential does. So when you look at these teams, that 8-game difference in the regular season, when you look at the actual underlying numbers, it might be a little bit more than that. Now, the Thunder are a very talented team. I've said that before. You look at the combination of Russell Westbrook on the perimeter with the level of bigs they have inside. That can scare a lot of teams, but the pieces have never really fit that well together. And when you look at kind of their underlying metrics, they're worse than even a standard 47-35 team in the Western Conference would look on paper. So I know a lot of folks are going to point to the fact that 3 of these 4 games between the Rockets and Thunder were close. Westbrook and Harden, obviously very comparable, and mount, you know, a case for this as an upset, especially because of the stereotype slower playoff basketball, the Thunder are big, blah, blah, blah. But the reality, when you look at the underlying metrics, the Rockets aren't just a better team. They are a significantly better team. And so when you take a step back and you look at what some of these models are showing, there's a reason for that. And I know you guys are going to get sick of me saying it by the end of this playoff run, but the history that a lot of the talking heads throw out there with Mike D'Antoni, quite frankly, it's just not all that accurate. The Suns had a lot of success. They just couldn't get past some really great Spurs teams led by Tim Duncan, who's probably the best player of his generation and one of the top 10 players in the history of the NBA. There was nothing in the Suns' results in the mid-2000s that showed their playoff performance on the offensive end of the court, or defense for that matter, was appreciably different than what they did in the regular season. They had decent playoff runs. The Spurs just happened to be a little bit better. And one of those runs, of course, maybe the Spurs weren't better. It was that fluky situation which the Suns had tied the series at 2 going back to Phoenix for basically a best-of-3 series with 2 in Phoenix. But Amari Stoudemire and Boris Diaw left the bench by about a foot after Robert Horry just checked Steve Nash to the ground, got suspended. Spurs won Game 5 in Phoenix. That was that. But you're going to hear a lot about the stereotype of Mike D'Antoni ball and the Thunder being the perfect foil for that. Don't really buy that. The underlying metrics show the Rockets are a much better team than Thunder. That's not saying the Thunder can't win. There are plenty bigger mismatches than this in which the lesser team has won. Stuff happens in the playoffs. All it takes is losing one game, especially early in a series. You lose a game 1 or game 2 at home, and then you lose home court advantage, and then the lesser team gains confidence. Sure, the Thunder absolutely have the ability to win, but on paper, the Rockets are the better team. This is not a toss-up, and so when you really dig a little bit deeper into this matchup and the stats underneath it, you should be fairly confident in this series. Not going to guarantee it because, well, it's far from a lock. But yes, the Rockets are a better team in this series. And if they perform to their ability, they absolutely should be the team advancing to the second round to play the San Antonio Spurs. Now, on the back half of this show, I'm going to do a special Rockets Twitter mailbag segment over at Locked on Rockets, our handle on Twitter. We've been taking questions from you, the fans. Also, our email, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, the last couple of days about the playoff matchup, the awards season voting, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to get to your questions in just a moment. But for now, do want to pause and acknowledge our wonderful sponsors over at SeatGeek because, well, sponsors like them are why we're able to bring this show to you on a daily basis, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. And, well, guys, this time of year, SeatGeek is doing an absolute favor to us as fans because if you want to go to the NBA playoffs, to me, the secondary market is the best place to do it. Buying from the box office, number one, sometimes it's not even possible when the games are completely sold out. And secondly, even if they aren't sold out, when you're looking at buying individual game tickets, the teams, they use the dynamic pricing model to raise the price of the tickets artificially high, to where sometimes the secondary ticket market, which is selling from season ticket holders who have bought the tickets at a lower rate, that's sometimes more economical than outright buying them from the box office. And well, if you want to go to the secondary market, if you want to play the system to your advantage, SeatGeek is the most friendly website and app that I have come across, because they give you the best bang for your buck. They grade every ticket from 1 to 100 so you know where the good value deals are. They cross-compare multiple websites so you know you're getting the best deal. They also have a guarantee on all tickets. Very reliable. And the best part of this, you guys, as my listeners, if you want to go to SeatGeek and get a ticket for Sunday or Wednesday or any Rockets home playoff game for that matter, you can get a $20 rebate just by using the promo code LORockets. To do that, here's what you do. Download that SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LORockets. From there, SeatGeek will send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. So jumping back into the show, spend the first part talking about some of the statistical models, the logistical schedule, all that sort of stuff of Rockets Thunder, what's to come over the next couple of weeks. But the second part, we've got some time to go. We've got a few off days to kind of regather ourselves. So I thought this was a good time to kind of take some questions from you guys, get a better pulse for the fan base. So I asked you guys, what do you want to know about the series, the award voting, whatever it may be? Got some pretty good tweets and emails, so I'll do a handful of them right now. So I'll start with my buddy Charlie, who sent us an email saying, with the NBA awards voting being talked about so much on Twitter, it got my friends and I thinking, what do you think would be more important or valuable to the franchise moving forward? Harden winning MVP or the Rockets winning Executive of the Year, Coach of the Year, and Sixth Man of the Year? Obviously, the awards aren't mutually exclusive, but I was curious as what your take might be and how either of those scenarios would affect the Rockets through free agency, franchise outlook, etc. That's actually a really good point, because I sense a lot of folks pessimistic about the Harden MVP chase, and I would actually say, in terms of the outlook, I actually think putting the spotlight on D'Antoni and Morey would mean more. I know a lot of us get caught up in Houston being slighted and that kind of stuff, but the reality, folks, people around the league respect James Harden. First off, he was the player's MVP 2 years ago, so that shows you how much his peers respect him. I can tell you how many guys, I think of DeMarcus Cousins just a few weeks ago, that have gone out of their way this season in interviews to say that, in their eyes, he's the MVP. The players that are in the film room, they know the workload that he takes on. They know his leadership. They know his attitude. He's well-liked amongst the NBA. I had Brian Geltzeiler, a good friend of mine on the show last week, and he said that he had heard around the league that he was afraid that Russell might not get the award, Russell Westbrook, because players like James that much more. Now, Brian did pick James as his MVP, but the reason he was saying that, he thinks James should win it on his own merits, not based on a personality conflict. Or personality contest, not a conflict. But where I'm going with that, whether James finishes first or second, he's well-liked by the players. They respect him. If James doesn't win MVP, it's not like that people around the league are going to say, man, that guy's trash. If he doesn't win, he'll be the runner-up. He's still really, really liked. So whether James is first or second, I don't think that really makes that big of a difference. People know what James Harden means to the Rockets, to the NBA. He's a star. The flip side, Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey, I know they're like now, but their reputation has been uneven the last few years. D'Antoni especially, but to a lesser extent Morey. It was never fair, but Morey took a little bit of a beating in terms of NBA Twitter and skepticism over the analytics. We know the Charles Barkley comments, etc., etc. If you give those two guys, D'Antoni and Morey, a spot on the big stage, basically honoring them for being the best in the NBA, I think that goes a long way to saying the Rockets aren't just a James Harden team, they're an organization as a whole. Now, as Charlie pointed out, they're not mutually exclusive, so I'd like to see them all win, and certainly I do think James deserves to win the MVP, but I actually think those are more important. Now, Sixth Man of the Year, that'd be nice too, but I don't think Sixth Man of the Year is a needle mover in terms of the perception of the franchise. That's more just it's cool for Eric as an individual. The other three, the coach, executive, and MVP, those are the ones that could be needle movers for the perception of a franchise. I actually think executive and coach of the year, given the Rockets' unique situation, would go further. James is great, but folks, guys around the league, they know James is great. I think the holdup is what are the Rockets as a whole, is their stability. And so if you have them go out and win Coach of the Year and Executive of the Year, I think that paints a picture of stability, of unity across the organization. And I think that would mean even more than the MVP when you're looking at free agency, franchise outlook, et cetera, et cetera. Now, next question, my buddy Chris Harris out on Twitter, should we worry about Alex Abrines? Not really. I hate to be that blunt, but it's tough for me to see a rookie at this stage of the NBA calendar that's been hurt recently playing that much of a role. This is a guy who, as recently as this past weekend, missed time with a knee injury. He's a rookie, just 23 years old, per of 11. He does have a decent outside stroke, can defend some, he's got some creative ability, but at this point in his NBA career, and with the premium that Billy Donovan seems to be placing on veterans, it's tough for me to see him playing more than an Anthony Morrow role, so to speak. I use Anthony Morrow because he's the last bench shooter for Oklahoma City that seemed to be a thorn in the Rockets' side for a number of years. Now, certainly I could see him doing that. Abrines shooting 38% plus from behind the three-point arc, and even if he's got a knee injury, it's tough to see that affecting his shooting that much. But in terms of his defense, his playmaking, his ability to play more than, say, a 15 to 20 minute per game role, I think a knee injury, a sprain, which you know means ligament damage, I think it's too late in the year to expect him, especially as a rookie, to carry that much of a role. I think he's potentially a decent bench shooter, and he did return in the season finale, actually returned the last two nights, Tuesday and Wednesday, for the Thunder against Minnesota and Denver, played 15 and 18 minutes, averaged 8.5 points a game, did go 5 of 8 from behind the arc, which tells you how well he can shoot. And so, yes, he's someone that they need to pay attention to, certainly. But at this point in his youth, with his knee injury, et cetera, I see him more as a stationary shooter. I don't see him as kind of a playmaker threat that's really going to tilt the balance or give the Thunder an X factor to become something else in this series. Now, my other buddy on Twitter, MFlow281, other question. How should they defend the Oklahoma City pick and roll? Boy, that is the question. That is what's going to define this series. First things first, when possible, I think the Rockets would love to switch, and they have the personnel to do it. I really hate the idea of either going under the screen or letting Russell Westbrook take a lot of set threes. I know Russell Westbrook on paper is not the best three-point shooter, but he is a very streaky shooter. And so if you give him those shots, if you give him shots in rhythm, then it's going to be so easy for him to catch fire. The one thing about Russell, I know his shooting percentages overall are pretty good. Obviously, there's a reason he's a candidate for MVP of the league, but there's a lot of streakiness in there. And so I am not a fan of giving him good looks, especially from outside, because if he gets hot from outside, that's when he can put up 50. That's when he's virtually unstoppable. So I don't want to let him get in rhythm. I think Mike D'Antoni agrees with that. The good news is that Clint Capela is starting. Also, the option of Montrezl Harrell off the bench. Those are two very athletic centers that can switch on a lot. Also, you're going to have Trevor Ariza playing a lot as your four. He won't start there, but he's certainly going to be your backup behind Ryan Anderson. Also, in most of the games against Oklahoma City this year, Trevor has actually closed the game at the four. Ryan's been on the bench for a lot of those. Actually, one game, I think Ryan closed it at the five. But in all four of those games, I believe, they closed out with Trevor Ariza at the four, which means you can switch there. And if you have Clint Capela and Montrez, those are guys that are athletic enough to even switch at the five. So that's a big thing for me. Switch on the guards when you can. Don't let Russell get into a rhythm and step into a shot. I think that's big. The X factor comes with Nene, because you know the Rockets are going to want to use Nene a lot against Steven Adams. He's the one guy, you can't expect him that often to move laterally against Russell Westbrook. Maybe he can in a pinch, but if you're asking him to do that very often, he's going to break down and he's not going to be able to do it physically. So that's where it gets tricky. What I would say is that Nene, especially if you could put him in minutes with Trevor Ariza, you can kind of combat that, because Ariza at the four, you can help, especially if the Thunder have someone like Taj Gibson, Sabonis, not really true three-point threats. I think the Rockets would be willing to have someone like Ariza hedge a little bit, help Nene if he gets caught on a switch without leaving a wide open three. I think that's big. I think avoiding playing Nene and Ryan Anderson together is important for that reason, because Ryan is not the kind of guy that's going to be able to make plays in space and hedge and recover to where he needs to go. I think that's the biggest thing, is the Rockets do want to switch a lot. I think they have the athleticism to do it. I think that's one of the reasons they've been pretty good defensively against Oklahoma City this year. The trickiest part is going to be trying to balance the need for Nene's physicality with the need for athleticism at the five spot to switch on those pick and rolls with Russell Westbrook. And so I think the key to that is to try and pair Nene with Trevor Ariza as much as you can. And you can have Ariza, maybe hedge is too strong, but keep a wary eye on what's happening up top, the action up there. And the downside is that, well, if Ariza is guarding Taj Gibson or Sabonis, he gives up an 18-footer, especially if he's able to recover and contest a little bit. That's not the end of the world for how the Rockets play defensively. I think that's the biggest thing. The Rockets are a fairly athletic team up front. Clint Capella, Montrezl Harrell, Trevor Ariza playing at the four. They've got some length. They can make plays in space. So yes, use your bigs to your advantage. Don't let Russell Westbrook step into those shots. Make him take contested looks. And well, even if Steven Adams gets an occasional roll to the bucket, or if Taj Gibson gets hot from mid-range, he actually did the last game, 6 of 7 against the Rockets, into March, it ultimately didn't matter because Ariza shot so well that Gibson only played 17 minutes. Ariza shooting well basically forced Billy Donovan to go to a smaller lineup, which would help the Rockets even more in terms of defending that pick and roll. But from my experience, Russell is a very streaky guy, and I would much rather make any of those other guys get hot. If they do, then maybe you adjust your coverages at that point. But initially, I would switch a lot. Do your best to get a hand in Russell's face at all times. Don't let him get that many open looks, because from my experience watching him, you let him get in a rhythm and all of a sudden it gets to be one of those games where he can put up 40 or 50. The flip side, even though he's MVP level, there are also other games where, quite frankly, he can shoot Oklahoma City out of it. That's the difference between Russell and James. One of the reasons that I think that James is the MVP, you rarely see James shoot the Rockets out of games. You do see Russell shoot Oklahoma City out of games. So if you can keep a hand in his face, if you don't go under that screen, you make life hard for him. Eventually, against a team that puts as many points up as the Rockets do, I think you can get him frustrated. One of the points last week by Brian Geltzider that I really liked in this series, he pointed out that if you want to beat the Rockets, you should probably want to slow them down. However, at the pace at which the Rockets play, it kind of lulls Russell into playing that pace as well. So I think you get him into shooting a lot of shots and you contest a lot of those shots. That's a recipe for making him, in my opinion, very inefficient. And hopefully that's a good way for the Rockets, especially these first two games. They should be very fresh. That's the last thing I'll point out about the pick and roll coverage is the first two games, the Rockets, when they play Sunday night, they will not have played in 4 days. The second night, Wednesday, they will have not played in 3. All of those games are in Houston. The Rockets would never have to have even gone outside the loop in over a week. So I think when you're fresh, that should make it really easy to be ultra-aggressive, even with your bigs defending those guards, most notably Russell Westbrook, on the pick and roll. Now, maybe it changes the deeper you get into a series. We'll see what adjustments the Thunder and Billy Donovan make to that. Also, when you start playing every other night, you start going from Oklahoma City to Houston, back to Oklahoma City, et cetera, maybe that changes the dynamics a little bit. But to start the series in Houston, very fresh roster, everyone healthy, yeah, I like the idea of switching. I like the idea of using your bigs to contest. Get out, get a hand in Russell's face as much as you can, and force him into those other guys, especially Steven Adams on the roll, Taj Gibson from mid-range. Make those guys be the scorers at first, and if that happens, you can adjust at that point. Jeff Bezdelic's shown a willingness to adjust not just to a secondary coverage, but a third coverage in many games defensively, so it's very possible if it doesn't work out, I'm sure he's got a willingness to change and do it quickly. But to start with, that's kind of my X's and O's take for what I would do if I were in Jeff's shoes. Anyway, I think that's enough X's and O's talk for one off day because, well, folks, we still have two more. Friday and Saturday, no Rockets games. We're going to have a lot more coverage here on Locked On Rockets in the days ahead. Either tomorrow or Saturday, I'm planning on having a roundtable discussion with my buddies Salman Ali, Forrest Walker over at Red Nation Hoops. Maybe a couple more surprise guests as well on that roundtable. And then, of course, next week, we get going with the actual series. Sunday and Wednesday, we'll have our usual postgame episodes. I've confirmed a crossover episode with Fred Katz, Oklahoma City beat writer and host of Locked On Thunder. We'll have that, I think, on either Monday or Tuesday, recapping Game 1. So that's kind of a look at what's ahead for us here on Locked On Rockets. For now, just kind of taking a step back yesterday, reflecting on the season as a whole, now taking some of your questions. And then I think tomorrow, Saturday, whenever we get that schedule nailed down, that's when we'll 100% go into the X's and O's of this matchup. And, well, dissecting just how much of a Rockets how much of a favorite the Rockets are, predictions. My early read is Rockets in 6. That's what I predicted in my pre-series column on sports790.com. That's the website for Sports Talk 790, the official flagship of the Rockets. where I write. But the more I look at it, I'm kind of leaning towards Rockets in 5 being a possibility. Kind of look at it a little more. Maybe I'll warm up to Rockets in 5 by a couple more days. Y'all will just have to stay tuned. For now, I will sign off and, well, get ready to enjoy the last couple of off days we have, because it's going to be a really busy few weeks. We hope a few weeks for the Rockets, assuming they are able to take care of business in this series. And then, of course, move on to the winner of the Spurs and Memphis Grizzlies in the 2-7 matchup. For now, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. Also, email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. If you have got questions, suggestions, or advertising inquiries, if you'd like to become a sponsor, just as our friends at SeatGeek were today. Remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets. You can get a $20 rebate in the mail off of your first ticket purchase. And yes, that absolutely applies to NBA playoff tickets if you want to go to SeatGeek.com and buy tickets to Game 1, Game 2, or any tickets in this upcoming playoff run for the Rockets. Just use that LO Rockets promo code and you can get $20 off via rebate. Also, if you guys aren't subscribing to us by now, I strongly urge you to do so. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, TuneIn, wherever you want to subscribe to your media, just search for Locked On Rockets. You can find any of our 170-some-odd episodes, and, well, we're going to have a lot more in the days and weeks ahead as the Rockets embark on what we hope is a very lengthy playoff run.